listening to Magic From Wherever I'm At with your host, the magician, time traveler, and charmer, D'Artagnan.
Welcome to another edition of the podcast. I'm D'Artagnan, and today I'm going to start with a story. It's sort of going to punch up a few more points I covered a couple podcasts ago. You know, I record these often months, if not weeks in advance, and you never really know how they're going to be received. Now, the one episode I did two episodes ago where I quoted from two old articles, I will assume ahead of time that those will be received one of two ways, basically. It will have been received with people overjoyed that I continue to beat the drum for raising the standards and raising magic back to the level of true art, or it'll be I'll be castigated for trying to delineate between people who are obsessive with the tools and the methods. We sort of talk about this a little bit, because this is often where people calling themselves magicians get tripped up. Is there, we all love, anyone involved in magic probably loves the secrets. I am fascinated with the secrets as well, the methods. Some of them are very simple, others are incredibly clever, but these are mere tools. No different than the carpenter's saw and hammer, no different than the baker's whisk or rolling pin. They're mere ingredients in a recipe, let's say, that will come together hopefully in magic. Now, if you go all the way back to episode one, the reason I delineated the word magician as to mean one thing and not another really stems from two places. It stems from something Tommy Wonder said, who is my favorite magicians, where he said, there can be no magic unless there is a performance. And the second place it stemmed from was really a designation or delineation other magicians of the past have made between professionals and amateurs. And sort of the old saw there was an amateur does many tricks for the same audience, whereas a professional does a few tricks for different audiences. And so I combined those two ideas, because I really think those are the truest ideas of what a magician is, combining those into my own thing, which is you perform regularly for strangers. Now, notice I did not include for money, which people often attach to professional, because I think performing for strangers means you're going to get honest feedback on at least a bunch of aspects of what you're doing. And that honest feedback, should you choose to accept it or not, and I've seen people not choose to accept it as well, is what's going to determine how you progress, how you're able to critically analyze what you're doing and who you are. And that's always, always a difficult thing. Now, many years ago, and I think I've maybe even told this story before on the podcast, it's hard to tell which ones I have and which ones I haven't sometimes, but I turned around one day on the pitch, which was one of the first really good hats I ever had. And I was queued up with my friend Warpo in New Orleans. And I turned around and was obviously pleased with the amount of money the crowd had bestowed upon me. You know, that was the first real breakthrough, you know, I would say, which was just several months in. You know, where I thought, okay, now we're getting somewhere in this regard, because people have like put all the pieces together maybe for the first time in regards to like a complete show. And Warpo said to me, which is something I have never forgotten and always think about, dwell upon, is he said to me, you wouldn't have made any more money had you been wearing a pink tutu and floated up to the balcony above us. Because we were standing under, you know, a balcony on the corner of St. Peter and Decatur. And basically, what Warpo was trying to convey there was it wasn't the magic. It wasn't the effect that was generating the money. Is that for the first time when I put those pieces together, I spoke about this on another podcast, is like that you created that vortex, that personal vortex that people were sucked into and they just like adored you. And that's when the money started to pour out. It's the human interaction. You know, I heard from in that same period, perhaps a little further along, someone once told me that someone had another person in New Orleans, another magician, had characterized my show as being an entire show where I'm asking people their name, right? Which I thought was a funny way because I did certainly do and did then probably try and engage a lot of people. I mean, the show is for them after all. But I thought that was an interesting way to characterize my show at the time. I have ideas of who said it, but doesn't matter really, because it said all I needed to know about that person, which was they thought either that was overkill or that wasn't important. And for anyone that's read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which is a classic must-read textbook for anybody involved in person-to-person interaction. So that's basically every human on the planet. There's a section in there, and I'm going to have to paraphrase it because I don't have it in front of me, but he basically says that the sweetest sound in any language is the sound of a person's own name. And I've known that for a long time because I've worked in a lot of other vocations where person-to-person contact, person-to-person selling. I was a bouncer at a nightclub for many years where I basically was the face of the nightclub. And so I interacted with hundreds and hundreds of people on a given night. That's a very interesting comment. It also dovetails on another comment I had when another magician had given me notes about one of my shows. And this was the second year I was in New Orleans because I had gone, everyone had, usually leaves in like late April or May, all the performers, because it starts to get too hot. Everyone goes away for the summer, comes back in the fall or winter for the next season. And so people had returned for the next season. They hadn't seen my show, and someone had given me notes. And one of the notes, and much along the same lines, one of the notes this person had given me was they had said to me, oh, you can make it more magical by doing it this way. Make it more magical by doing it that way. Make it more magical in this section. Reveal this card a different way. And all these sort of magic-y notes. And I was listening. I wanted notes. I wanted to hear what this person thought. I had invited the criticism. And then he struck upon something which is basically all I needed to hear from everything he had said. He said, the people loved you. But I mean, you should really do it. And he like almost volunteered that by accident and then tried to like pull it back by saying, well, but really you should do it. And completely missed the whole idea, which was like, this is for them. They loved you. And so this is one of those things that separates, from the former episode, tricksters versus magicians. Tricksters are almost entirely concerned and immersed and absorbed and obsessed, right, with the methods, the sleights, the tricks themselves, the moves, and all these things. And the first image that pops into my mind when I think about that kind of stuff is Gollum from Lord of the Rings, with his the precious. It's like this coveting of these things that people have made, these like intricate, mechanical things, which are just tools. They're just ways to express, to help you, tools to help you express yourself by creating magic. So you can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself, but unless you're using those tools to make magic, which is in the performance, which is engaging the audience, which is coming up with presentations, then really you're not a magician either. Aside from my delineation at the very basic level of performing for strangers on a regular basis, if you're not creating engaging presentations to help punch up the magic and engage the spectators, you're really not a magician either. You are a trickster. Now, I'm sure going to look in the mirror and calling yourself a trickster or realizing you are is probably not going to be an easy pill to swallow. But the first step, progressing, and we all go through these things. I mean, I'm certainly the farthest from perfect you could imagine, as I tussle with this stuff every day myself, of course. And that's why it's important to draw these distinctions, because I would like to push the progress forward, right? It's in an effort to raise the standards so that just doing these tricks so brazenly without putting any work into them, any real work into them, aside from the actual moves and stuff, is like one of the stupidest things I've ever come across. Now, you can do that. I'm not going to hate you as a person. You can still be a very nice person. We can still talk about many other things. But if you're going to talk about magic, this is my opinion. I think you're missing it completely. Your involvement in magic is basically shambolic, in my opinion. Because it would be like you're a carpenter, and I happen to be sitting at a very finely crafted table right now. You know, it's very thick, it's got these nice edges on it. And if I were to take all the tools and pile them on the table and like hold them in my hand and like, ooh, salivate over them, I'd be missing the whole thing, which is the experience of this table to get your family around and have meals with and socialize and stuff. And that's the same with magic. You're engaging these people. You're drawing them into this fantastical world that a magician creates so that they leave in a better condition. Not just because they don't know how you do it. No, you pulled one over on them and boy, that's great. And all the people that are absorbed with the tricks and the methods, it also suggests that you have the entire attention of what you're doing placed on yourself and not on the people you're performing for, even if you even perform, which is a holy, those two are often attached. You know, and people can pay lip service to saying, well, they enjoy my tricks or whatever, but we all know on some level, it's just you're not willing to put the work in, because it can be a very difficult, arduous process if you are not used to doing it. It can seem very difficult and arduous, but it's not. To raise it just one level is so easy, but people seem to they're just so absorbed with everything else, they just couldn't be bothered. And that suggests that you don't value magic and the art of magic as much as you say you do. Because if you actually valued it, you'd be putting the work in, because you'd want to represent it to the people in the audience in its best form. But you don't want to, because you just love the tricks and the methods, right? So enough about me. I'm going to delve into another article, which I set aside a couple years ago. And I think you're going to like this, perhaps. This article happens to be written by Fred Keating. There may be some YouTube videos with Fred Keating performing. I'm not sure. This is taken from the Sphinx as well. It was called A2 Brute. Right, a play on the Julius Caesar. And we'll just delve right in. So there was a guy called Robert Houdin. He defined a magician as, quote, an actor playing the part of a magician, unquote. I doubt if even today's great magicians would try to improve that definition. And that's something maybe I'll delve into in a different thing, because Roberto Giobbe had some very interesting things to say about the actor playing a part of a magician. So we'll maybe tackle that on another episode. Now, Mr. Keating goes on to say, the greatest technician, the greatest inventive genius, but lacking in showmanship, is like an actor who, regardless of his technical skill, is unable to convey to the audience the meaning of his role in relation to the play. If magic is an art,
overemphasis of subtlety and technique impose upon it frightful limitations.
Yeah, let's stop there for a second. If magic is an art, says Mr. Keating, overemphasis of subtlety and technique impose upon it frightful limitations. And he goes on to say, art is a matter of conveying to others what you think, what you feel, or the beauty of what you do. It cannot, art cannot exist in a vacuum. A very great way of putting it. Because that's exactly what I'm talking about every time I do one of these podcasts, is without crafting good presentations and engaging presentations and trying to lever up the levels of your magic, you're imposing what Mr. Keating terms frightful limitations. And he'd be 100% correct. So he goes on here and he says, there must be, and this is a very interesting way to put it. I wouldn't have thought to maybe put it quite this way, but he did. He said, there must be sleight of mind as well as sleight of hand. The layman is not as interested in the ways and means of magic as you might like to think. And we covered that, of course, in a previous episode where a lot of people think magicians are under the spell that magic is loved by, you know, just most people. And that is simply not true. Now, he goes on to talk about lay people here when he says, lay people, neither has he concern with the blood, sweat, and tears from which a symphony or poem was fashioned. He is, and rightfully, interested only in the finished product. It takes creative spontaneity. It takes artistry, my friend, not just technical skill or inventive ingenuity to keep people from what, Mr. Keating? From being bored stiff by magic. From being bored stiff by magic.
Oh la la!
Thus, he goes on, the quote unquote, take a card, juggle it, over manipulate it addicts of today have done magic more harm than good. They've put the cart before the horse, and they've led the faithful into the paths of dullness and jugglery. Ooh, that's a powerful sentence there. They put the cart before the horse and led the faithful into the paths of dullness and jugglery. Now, by innuendo and neglect, they have made presentation a thing of contempt. Oh, the prose with Mitch Keating here rolls out this stuff is certainly almost unmatched from what I've read. By innuendo and neglect, they have made presentation a thing of contempt. This just conjures up the images when people say, you know, they make excuses for why they have no presentations. It's like they almost have contempt for presentation. Oh, that's so true. I mean, that's just such an interesting way to put it. And then he goes on to say, what could have been and can be an art, they have, well intentionally enough perhaps, thrown topsy-turvy. And this next part, I think, really just takes an absolute bat and smashes it exactly the way I wish it to be smashed, which is they pay lip service to the value of presentation, but in practice, it's only that, practice. Moves, 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 slights, 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 tricks, tricks, tricks. And I'm not even exaggerating that. All those words were written in the article three times each. Moves, 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 slights, 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 tricks, tricks, tricks. Because that's what it is. It's just a steady diet of the tools. Now, toward the end of this article, Keating wraps it up by saying, any art to be, in his estimation, true art, must reasonably combine craftsmanship, style, and appeal. When art becomes esoteric, it ceases to be art. And that is, those are Mr. Keating's words and his opinions. I happen to agree with the majority, if not all of that. And that's certainly interesting how he, a very good writer, actually. And the way he phrases that craftsmanship, style, and appeal. Right? And in my program, Secrets for Real Magicians, I took this article. One of the presentations, one of the lessons is based around this article and the craftsmanship, style, and appeal approach, which you can avail yourself of if you so desire to actually make presentations for your magic and make them more engaging and actually make the magic, which is the whole point, according to what I think of how magic should be conducted. Now, that's going to be it for today. We're over 20 minutes already. If you would like to be part of my magic program, go to d'artagnanmagic.com/realmagic and jump on. Email list there. I send out emails on a regular basis talking about these very subjects in more detail or in more examples than just on the podcast. And you can also be the first to know when the program reopens. And I'll be accepting new people into the program, which will probably be in February of 2019, whenever this comes out, which I think will be probably the latter part of January. And D'Artagnan Magic on all social media at gmail.com. We'll get back to revealing a few more of the people I have managed to interview that are involved in Secrets of Real Magicians program. And I will be teasing those upcoming leading up to the reopening of the program, because I've interviewed quite a few people, as it turns out. If you really enjoy this podcast, or it makes you seethe with rage, regardless, leave a iTunes review. You can blast me if you wish, and give me 0 stars, or whatever you want to do, or give me 5, or any combination thereof. As long as you're out there listening, I think it can be valuable for the both of us. So until next time.